world. I'm John Batchelor. Behind the Black. Happy anniversary, Behind the Black. The end of the July fundraising. And a thank you from the master Behind the Black poster, Bob Zimmerman himself. Bob, subscriptions and donations, welcome. But your thank you, also welcome. Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Yes, I have to thank everybody of your listeners who were generous, very generous. This was the second best fundraiser I've done in July. My overall donations this year still is below last year, but it's the difference is significantly reduced from that donations. So your listeners, I have to thank them all again for their generous help, John. Very much appreciated.
Off to White House. White House has made a significant decision about a White House decision that was made in the last administration. This has to do with the Space Force and the headquarters. As I understand it, it was in Colorado, and then Trump said it's going to be in Alabama. Now Biden says it's going to be in Colorado. Is that it, Bob?
That's more or less it. Remember that before Trump, there was no Space Force. So the Air Force had had most of its major space-related operations, let's say, in Colorado. That's where most of its major operations were. And when Space Force was created, they had to create, of course, a bureaucracy. That's always the goal, really. It's not really helping the country. It's really creating more jobs for bureaucrats. But they needed to have a headquarters. And the assumption had always been that it made sense to put that headquarters in Colorado. Trump, right near the end of his administration, practically weeks before he stepped down, announced that it was going to move it to Alabama instead. There were some political reasons why it would allow the Trump to and the federal bureaucracy to maybe gain some control over the Space Force. It might be doing political favors for Alabama Republican politicians. But that's what decision Trump made. Now, I said at the time that this really doesn't make much sense. It's only going to cost a fortune because most of the operations are in Colorado. And I thought that there was going to be great difficulty making that happen. And so for 2 years, there's been battles between Colorado and Alabama politicians fighting over this, with Colorado politicians very strongly opposing it and using the fact that most of the operations in Colorado as their ammunition for slowing the change down. So after 2 years of fighting, the Biden administration this week announced that it's reversing that Trump decision, and they're going to put the headquarters in Colorado. No surprise, Alabama politicians are claiming we're going to fight this, we're going to fight this. The difference is that this establishment of a new headquarters can happen very, very fast, very little money. While moving it to Alabama was going to be complicated and take a lot of time. And so announcing it's going to be in Colorado, it's going to probably be in Colorado very, very quickly. And I should add that the cost for doing the change to Alabama, that's an argument that the politicians will have to fight, because the same politicians in the Senate, in the House, have already announced they're going to cut the Space Force's budget by about $1 billion, about a 3% reduction. And it's an actual cut. And that cut means there's not going to be a lot of spare money to move the headquarters. So I don't expect the headquarters to move. I think it's going to be established in Colorado. And I think from a common sense point of view, based on where the operations are, this makes sense.
Houston, we have a problem. Okay, this the phrase that lights up Apollo 13. The Houston part, Bob, decisions about big space were always made for political considerations. Houston, Texas. And at the time, there was a man in the White House named Johnson.
Yeah.
So same as it ever was, Bob. Mr. Trump was doing a favor for the red state of Alabama. Mr. Biden is doing a favor for the blue state of Colorado. Yes?
I agree with that. Those politics are always a factor. But I would say that just from simple common sense of the nature of how the Space Force is structured right now, where most of its operations are, it always made more sense to be in Colorado anyway. I agree. The politics has always been part of this decision. These politicians very rarely, almost never, make their decisions on common sense. They always do it on politics.
Oh, it's such a relief now to talk about science, because there's no politics in science, Bob. Ever since the church learned its lesson with Galileo Galilei, there's been it just leaves the room, and anybody tries to raise a political objection, they're asked to turn in their decoder ring, right?
Wrong. And we both know that's the way it had actually been since the Enlightenment for almost five centuries. But over the last half century, that has been dying. And there's a really interesting paper that I highlight on Behind the Black. I wrote an essay about it that looked at over 2,600 research articles published from 97 to 21 in Science, a peer-reviewed journal. And they chose Science because it publishes articles from multiple disciplines. It's not just focused on one area of science. And this analysis by a group of scientists looked at the number of times papers used a variety of uncertain type terms like could, appear to, approximately, seem, might, those kind of some people call them weasel words, but when it comes to science, when there is uncertainty, you have to mention the uncertainty. In fact, you should be proud of the uncertainty. The uncertainty is what science is built on. And what they found is that in that four-year period, there was a decline in the use of these, what they call hedging words, by 40%. 40%. That's a trend that's been going on now for decades, without question. Anyone who's been reading the science literature like I do and knows the importance of skepticism has noticed the growth of certainty in papers when certainty was just not justified. And so this paper points this out. It's a published paper, the paper in Science itself, and in the publication of the analysis of the paper, they, of course, immediately went to one of the executive editors of Science to get her reaction to it, and she was, once again, blind to the issue. There is, one of the factors in this is not just simply that science papers, scientists will, for money, will have to be more certain so that they can gain funding and move grants, but there's the leaking of politics into science for the last five decades everywhere, mostly leftist politics, but politics nonetheless. I mean, so this began with the climate issue, where the whole climate community decided global warming was a certain thing caused by humans, and anyone who questioned it was going to be destroyed. And the ClimateGate emails showed that that's exactly what they were trying to do. And it's now leaked into many, many other places. And this science editor herself was afraid to mention the presence of politics here. And the reason, of course, is that they like the politics and they want to keep the politics in there. And it's unfortunately a bad corruption of science. And we stand on the edge of the end of the Enlightenment because of it, John.
Momentous. What is Momentous?
Momentous is a orbital tug company, John. It's one of these cottage industry space companies that's providing services in a very localized, specific area. And so they've been testing, flying test flights of what they call the Vigoride orbital tug. They've done six different test flights. Some have been more successful than others. They're demo flights. They actually have payloads, and they're trying to release those payloads, bring them to new orbits. But they announced recently that they've successfully completed the deployment of all the payloads that were launched in April on their sixth Vigoride orbital tug. And they've done three demonstration missions in the last 14 months, deploying 15 customer satellites. And they had some technical problems. They have two more missions scheduled in November of this year and February of next year. And this is just part of the cottage industries, John, as I mentioned. If you're a secondary small sat, you can't get the orbit you want when you're launched by a larger rocket as a secondary payload. But the tug company now exists. There are more than one of these that can put you in the right orbit after launch. And so you buy the launch, get as cheap as possible, and then you hire a tug company to get you to where you want to go. It's really good stuff.
In other words, the market's at work. Now, Bob, there was a valve problem, I'm remembering, with a Russian craft, I believe.
Yes, and not just Russian, also Boeing Starliner had valve problems. That's correct.
And now there's a valve problem with Dragon. What's a valve problem?
Well, it depends. You know, it's engineering. It's complicated engineering. This is rocket science. So in each case, you're kind of dealing with different issues. However, in this case, it's interesting. The cargo Dragon capsule that was docked to ISS in June and has come back to Earth apparently had a valve issue while it was docked to ISS. It was a valve issue that did not cause any problems. It was a valve that was designed to operate if there was a leak in a thruster, but there were no leaks in the thruster, so that the valve had failed didn't matter. That's a good thing. The problem is a bad thing, but at least it didn't cause any issues. The Dragon capsule came back. SpaceX people are investing the valve. It appears that corrosion was the issue, which, by the way, is the same problem that Boeing had on its Starliner valve issues. Now, SpaceX is looking at it, and they're trying to figure out what the problem is. And the way SpaceX always works is they don't just simply make a temporary fix or a quick patch fix. They'll redesign so that this problem will never reappear again. They'll look at this as an opportunity. They learn something, and then you make sure it doesn't happen again. So this just strengthens the reliability of a cargo capsule from SpaceX. But it did happen. And this is part that illustrates this is rocket science. It's very complicated, and you got to get your engineering right.
A shot an arrow in the air where it lands, in the ocean, I know not where, and then it washes up on Australia. What's the solution to that junk on Western Australia?
Yes, we had a piece of a metal cylinder washed up on the beach. Space geeks immediately identified it as looking exactly like an upper stage from an Indian PSLV rocket, and this is pretty standard upper stage. We did not. That's what the geeks proposed. Well, now India has confirmed that debris was an upper stage from an old PSLV rocket. The key is they don't know which rocket, how old it is. It's not a recent launch. And what's interesting about that is upper stages are supposed to burn up in the ocean, burn up in the atmosphere as they come in. And not only did this piece of upper stage survive the reentry relatively well, it looks like, it was floating in the ocean for a considerable amount of time. We don't know how long yet. And then was recovered on the beach. What that suggests is that it might be possible to get upper stages back with just a little bit of creative engineering. That's what this suggests. And it's an interesting thing. We still don't know which PSLV rocket it came from, and that's going to be interesting when they find that out.
The China Radio Array. Now, this is not the big radio telescope they've constructed somewhere deep in China that nobody wants to go to, right? This is a new radio array.
Correct. What the Chinese have done is they've done a variation. With the first one you mentioned, it's called FAST. They basically copied the Arecibo radio telescope, where they put a antenna in a valley and put the pointing piece above it, suspended above it. And it was bigger than Arecibo, and now it's the only one because Arecibo is gone. So they copied that. You're right. They're having trouble finding Westerners who want to scientists who want to operate it. Well, I say, okay, have Chinese operate it. That's okay. Well, they've now opened up a new radio telescope array that copies the American very long array, the VLA array in New Mexico. And it's a little different configuration. The VLA is configured in a Y shape, and they can expand it or shrink it depending on what they want to do. The Chinese array is they put the small antennas in a two mile wide antenna circle that points the radio data to an antenna in the center. And this gives you a different kind of look, and you can basically get much more resolution on the radio telescope by doing it this way. And they've now begun trial operations on this new radio array to do astronomy, John. And it just shows the Chinese might be copying, but they get it done, and they're doing work, and that's a good thing.
Bob Zimmerman keeps the website Behind the Black, 13 years of remarks about big space and admiration for commercial space. We're going to turn to discovery space next. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.